This is a market update. Yes, the third week in a row, we are going to do a market update. It's a beautiful thing. You know, my grandfather was famous for saying, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Isn't that so true? I'm reminding myself of that at this moment because I woke up a little bit grumpy this morning. So I'm mentally working on getting happy. Does that ever happen to you? I don't know why that happens sometimes. No reason for it. Slept good. Hey, it just happens every so often. But we are in control of our emotions. Which brings me to one of the points I'm going to talk about today. And that is the predominant mistakes that we see over and over and over again that investors make. I'm going to identify them for you, give you a heads up so that you can start to look for them because they are everywhere and subtle. These are common mistakes that people make when it comes to investing. But before I get into that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let me talk about the market update because that really is a big part of why we do a podcast every week. The market update, we believe in global market returns. We believe in many of the scientific and empirical studies that have been done academically the last 50 years. Harry Markowitz, Modern Portfolio Theory, Eugene Fama, Kenneth French with the three-factor, now the fourth-factor model, Merton Miller, William Sharp, Measurements of Risk, etc. And as a result, the science has dictated a very clear distinction as it relates to investing. And it's pretty simple. Three rules. Own equities, diversify, and rebalance. And understand it's a lifelong game. I mean, one does not invest for a short period of time. You invest for your lifetime. So these three rules, own equities, diversify, and rebalance, very simply dictate that one wants to own an entire global-based portfolio. That is, you want to have monies invested in the U.S. and all the international and developed markets. You want to be in small companies and value companies and growth companies and large companies and emerging market companies and developed market companies as it relates to international. You want to be invested in short-term cash and fixed instruments like T-bills and short-term bonds and cash. So it's important that we understand that we want to be invested in a total global market. We need to understand the concept of dissimilar price movement, umbrellas and suntan lotion. We never know what horse is going to win the race, but we're going to own the entire field of horses because the market is like going up a flight of stairs with the yo-yo. It always hits new highs, but it goes up and down. It has a two-thirds bias. Two out of every 3 years is up, one out of every 3 years is down. We never know which until we look back with hindsight bias. So the only prudent thing that one can do, you certainly can't look to the news for any type of guidance as it relates to investment because everywhere you look, you get point counterpoint. You get doom gloom or you get greed and growth potential stories. So prudence dictates that we want to own an entire global, broad-based global portfolio. This is why we do the market update. I said all that just to paint the picture as to why we do this. So we think that it's important. It is vital that you understand how the market's doing as you go along. And the easiest way to do that is to look at the industry index of different areas or indice plural of all the different indexes or indice of different areas of the market. Small, large, growth, international, developed, etc. And i.e. that was the emphasis of the market update is we wanted one source to go look at all those weekly and just get a picture. So where are we as of June 15th? Wow, is that the middle of the year? Is June 1st the middle of the year? I don't want to think about that. Or would it be June 30th that would be the middle of the year? Too early. I'm having my second cup of coffee as we speak, as I speak. Market update, 6:15:15. Russell 2500, this measures the performance of small to mid-sized companies. In year-to-date, it's 5.76%. So small to mid-sized companies are up 5.75%. And that is, in fact, up about a half a point from last week. Russell 2000, this measures small to very small micro companies. The last was mid-cap. This is micro. 5.25% year-to-date. Well, it's up since last week. Russell 1000, this measures large value, not growth, but value companies. That's a discussion for another time. And year to date, it's 0.65%. That looks like the laggard. Large value companies are the laggard as of roughly the middle of 2015. Russell 2000, this measures the performance of small value companies, not small growth, but small value companies, and it's 1.69%. That as well is up. In fact, it looks like everything's up across the board since last week, although we're having a rocky red day so far today. The S&P 500, this is widely regarded as the best single gauge of the U.S. equities market, and it's year-to-date 1.24%. So what do we got here domestically? Well, we're on our on pace to have double digits if it goes like this. Of course, we're having some volatility this week based on who knows what. Some tidbit of news that'll have no bearing 5, 10, or 15, or 20 years, probably no bearing whatsoever in your retirement account unless you're taking it now, and it still won't have any bearing because your money is going to be invested until you're no longer with us. But the U.S. looks good so far. How are we doing internationally? Well, internationally, we're going to use the Morgan Stanley Capital International Index, and we're going to look at three of them. The first one is the World Index. Now, this measures developed markets. 2.77% to the plus. When we go to the emerging, this would be a Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Markets Index. So this would be more, not developed countries, but emerging countries. So these would be more fledgling financially companies. Not fledgling, it's not the right word. Emerging markets, markets that aren't quite as developed as some of the larger ones. That sounds profound, right? Anyway, 1.5%. Emerging markets, 1.5% up for the year. Year-to-date, June 15th. And the last one, Europe, Australia, Far East. Now, this would be everything that's measured of developed markets. So all the international developed countries, excluding specifically North America, U.S., and Canada. 5.24%. Internationally, looks like it is comparatively... Everything's up except for the EAFE, Europe, Australia, Far East Index. That's the only one it took a little bit that's down, actually, from... No, it's up as well. I'm sorry. It's up as well. I guess you're all up. Everything's up. The A-team. So far, this market update, we have everything up from last week, and that would be probably closer on par to the week before, because last week we went down, this week we're back up. Hey, it's a yo-yo. Up and down, like... It's like going up and down stairs playing with a yo-yo. This leads me to the three most common mistakes that are propagated by investors that are almost, and I hate to be so definitive, but one could certainly find evidence that they're almost encouraged by the industry at large because they are extremely profitable for the industry. It creates the largest windfall they see when they look at where their circles of profit are within their business models. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, they've been around forever. Nothing's new. And it's really interesting because these three mistakes are so tightly woven into, you know, the human experience and how we are wired emotionally. The survival instincts that we gain just from a child, you know, the fear, the fight or flight complex type of thing, you know, fear and pain and seeking out pain or pleasure. Without sounding too much like Freud over here, so to speak, or some psychologist. Some big brain psychologist is what I had in my mind when I said that, not psychotic. But the three mistakes that we see most often with investors, and these are very common. One is stock selection or stock picking. And we define that by choosing stocks that are believed they'll do well in the future. The myth is that investment advisors can consistently and predictably add value by exercising superior skill in individual stock selection. It's inferred, it's implied, it's boldly stated in newsletters, on talking heads on TV, that people have some insight. Now, they don't, they always kind of leave it out because, you know, anyone in essence says they know what's going to happen in the market moving forward is either ignorant or devious. The question would be, it goes back to the thing I've always found interesting. If you have the recipe, why do you need to sell it? You know, you see people with these newsletters out there predicting this stock or that stock based on very reasonable conclusions brought on by reading a lot of data based on, you know, whether, like one of my professors used to talk about, he always looked at box count. He always looked at the inventory of cardboard and whether that was going up because he knew companies would be ramping up their box production and production of stuff whenever their products were starting to anticipate launches and so on and so forth. So, you know, just looking for indicators and trying to draw some kind of pattern. You know, our brain automatically draws patterns, as I talked about in the last podcast, but stock selection is really devious because it's constantly talked about. In fact, if you go on to the different financial shows, you'll see the constant reference and input of one particular stock or perhaps a money manager that's on there that's promoting certain stock that's in their portfolio, etc. But when we look at the actual data, there's no clear data to show that any manager, any stock picker has outperformed just what the market has done as a whole. Returns come from the market, not from managers. So chasing stock is not going to improve your investment end. Rather, it's going to diminish it because by chasing markets and chasing stock, there's cost involved with transactions. I've always found it interesting how the financial industry has very good earnings, sometimes record earnings. In fact, I think they were record earnings in 2009 after 2008 when we saw that the earnings come in better in down years when there's more fear, there's more transactional temperament, if you will. This illusion that we have control is propagated, it's encouraged by the industry, and it leads to us spending a lot of money under that guise that we do have control. Right behind this is one that's very elusive as well, and that is track record investing. This is myth number two, or the biggest second mistake that we see. I have three mistakes. One is stock picking. The second one is track record investing. The definition of this is the use of performance history to determine the best investments for the future. The myth is finding funds that did well in the past is a reliable method of indicating which funds would do well in the future. The reality is there's no proof whatsoever that holds this out. When we look at the Center for Research and Security Pricing housed within the University of Chicago, it's the largest database of returns. Between Morningstar and the University of Chicago, we can pretty much find anything that's ever happened that has any data tied to it. And what we see over and over again is the funds that are selling are the funds that are doing the best at that time, but it is rare, if any, to ever see funds that repeat over five, especially 10-year periods. It implies that someone is smarter than you, has insight that you don't have, that's working within a different set of rules that you're working within, that has some superior intellect or superior insight. Well, if that was the case, why would they share it? I mean, come on. I mean, if you had some insight and was smart enough to figure out what was going to happen in the market with any kind of consistency, you'd be smart enough to keep your mouth shut. What would you gain by sharing that information? Rather, you could sit in a beautiful beach villa, do a little bit of trading in the morning, and spend the afternoon lounging in the ocean with your family or whatever it is that flips your switch. So to imply it, why are these people working? You know, these all these talking heads, these people selling newsletters, these people with these shows that imply they have some insight, some more than others. I mean, if they did, why would they be working? I mean, what's their motivation? Are they workaholics, maybe? I don't know. Perhaps that's what it is. Market timing, number three. This is the one that's the most insidious, the one that's most subtle, and the one that you got to watch out the most for. Market timing is an attempt to alter or change the mix of assets that you would have based on a prediction or forecast about the future. The myth is that money managers are able to utilize market timing effectively to predict up and down markets. When we look at the actual data, what we find is nothing more than a very simple bell-shaped curve. You all saw it in high school or college. Blind random luck when we look at stock picking. And as a result, we see the same thing in market timing, because when we look at market timing and we look at periods of time where we've missed certain days of the market. A great example is this. Back in 08, I believe it was November, there was a Friday. You know, the market was going crazy. The Fed chairman came out and said we were going to heck in a handbasket, and people started pulling money out of the market, and it was just kept tumbling and tumbling and snowballing. And what's interesting is there was a Friday where there was an 800-point drop on the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones represents 30 large U.S. companies. So there was a substantial drop on the Dow. I mean, the Dow was around 14,000, and it ended up bottoming out at about 7 before it made the turn, and now it's back up into 17, 18,000 now. But at that juncture, there was an 800-point drop, which was massive. Well, what happens to the poor soul that sold out on that Friday, worrying the market was going to continue to tumble, when the next Monday there was an 1,100-point run-up on the Dow? That person would have taken several years, probably about now, perhaps last year, to get even from the loss that they absorbed by trying to time the market, where people that didn't time the market and just left their money alone, 18, 24 months later, were back in the black, 30 on the high side, depending on, you know, how your money more aggressively took longer, more conservatively, less time. So, you know, the market, we never know when the next down's going to be, but we do know that when the next up is, it's going to be extraordinary. The market bounces back at an incredible rate. So to imply that you have the control to pick your own stocks, to really research certain managers and different results and help with that process, and then time when you're going to get in and out of the market is futile. It's expensive. The stock market levies very heavy tuition bills, and those tuition bills are levied through losses against your life savings and retirement account. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to spend a little time doing some e-trading or Scott trading or robo-trading or having this illusion of control, that you're in control, take a few bucks and play the market just like you would go to Vegas and gamble. You know, nobody ever loses in Vegas. But these mistakes, and all the time I've been in this industry and for all that I've read about this industry prior to that, are over and over and over again. History continues to repeat itself. People continue to do it. People who know better continue to do it. Advisors that teach against it and know better do it when the market starts to fail and the market starts to turn. You know, it's hard to be strong when the masses are going the other direction. And you know, these techniques, these myths, these often touted as defensive strategies are nothing more, in my humble opinion, than a guise to create an awful lot of transactional profit for the industry as a whole. Now, if you can gain along the way, Mr. Investor, that's wonderful. We want you to. But regardless, it's like the house in a casino. They're going to make money. Regardless, they're going to make money. This is why coaching is so important, back to what we do. This is why fee-only advisors and registered investment advisory firms are so important. This is why fiduciary standards are so important. And this is part of why we do what we do. Education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence. And only with confidence can one have peace of mind. With that being said, I'm going to shut up, call it a day. Hope this finds you well. Hope you're blessed and endeared by the couple nuggets that we've shared with you. If you'd like to learn more, go to our website, faicoach.com, faicoach.com, or call us directly, 814-867-5745. This is Paul Nichols, the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisory firm, registered in the state of Pennsylvania, housed in part one of our main offices in State College, Pennsylvania, Happy Valley. Hope this finds you well. Have a wonderful day.